You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay three nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Mic check, 1, 2, levels are good. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 1 of Reveal Week. Now, here's what Reveal Week is all about. Today, we are going to be talking with Chris B. Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Jeff Sturgis. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Nate Crick of Identical Draw, one half of the Identical Draw brothers. And it's just all really good conversation with a theme, right, of maybe we're going to be talking about some trail cameras. The reason we're doing this is because Reveal, Tacticam Reveal, has launched their brand new 3.0 trail camera, and this is to just increase the buzz about it. If you want to find out information about the Reveal 3.0, the best thing to do is go to tacticam.com. And I think it's tacticam.com/cameras. Yes, that's what it is. And go check it out, right? They have two different versions of the camera. And I'll tell you this, man, they're pretty slick. The ease of use is really, really awesome. I'm in the process of getting batteries in all of mine and getting mine set up here once state baseball is over, and that's going to be next week at some point. So I'm really looking forward to getting the cameras out and start getting pictures of Velvet Bucks, man. That's the hope. Now, today's episode, right? Today's episode. Here's what we're going to talk about in today's episode. We're going to talk about the beginning for Chris B, right? When he got into archery, when he got into bow hunting, shooting deer, shooting competitive archery, all the way up to starting a YouTube channel, right? Not necessarily dropping out of college, but putting college on the back burner for a while and allowing him to go chase his passion and starting this YouTube channel and bow hunting and archery and things like that. So this is essentially a hunter profile podcast that all of you guys are going to enjoy. I've never had Chris on the show before, so it was a pleasure talking with him and hearing his story. Like I tell most people, man, I really don't consume a lot of, I don't know, hunting content per se. You know, I grew up in a print era. maybe even crossing over to the VHS tapes, that like the big buck VHS tapes that a lot of these companies were selling, like Realtree Monster Bucks. I read a lot of magazine articles from Outdoor Life. And so I'm not up to date, to be honest with you, with who's popular on YouTube or in the social media side of things, mostly because I hate social media. But that's why I love this episode, is because I get to see inside of a different part of this industry, something that I'm not necessarily familiar with. So enjoyed the conversation. Now, I'm going to run through a couple things, and this is reveal week, so we are going to take some time to talk about the reveal trail camera, but I just want everybody else to know the partners that I work with, and I strongly suggest going out and just taking a look at the gear that these companies offer, because I'm working with some cream of the crop type companies, right? And so if you're looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered, tetherednation.com. Wasp Archery, in my opinion, some of the best broadheads on the market, fixed and expandable, wasparchery.com. And I do have a discount code, NFC20. Vortex Optics. Funny thing about Vortex Optics is that they have a brand new pair of sunglasses. They have sunglasses that they've just released. And today, and just like most of my sunglasses, anytime I'm on a boat, there is a risk that they fall out. And so I jumped in the water. I handed my sunglasses to my daughter, and I said, "Hey, give these to me after I jump in." And so I jumped in, and then I was talking to my niece, and she didn't wait for me. She put them on my life jacket while I'm in the water, and I turned around and they're gone. And so there's a brand new pair of Vortex Optics sunglasses sitting in the bottom of the lake that we were in yesterday. And so I was a little frustrated at that. So they're good sunglasses. It just so happens that one of the pairs are about 30 foot down in some water. All right. That's Vortex Optics, cream of the crop, man. Go check them out. Feed Hub, right? If you guys, this is a brand new, what would I call this? This is a brand new exploration, or this is a brand new product from Moultrie Mobile. This is something that attaches to spin cast feeders and allows you through the Moultrie Mobile app to control your spin cast feeder. There's levels, things like that. So the best thing to do at this point would be go to MoultrieMobile.com and find the and read up on the Feed Hub. Perfect for anybody who runs spin cast feeders. Next, Code Blue Sense. Man, I just put in an order for some more Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kits. I should be getting those within the next couple weeks. And once I get those, I'm going to pair those with my Reveal trail cameras, and it's going to be absolutely money. I should have a pretty good grip on everything that's going around on the properties, except for some of the river bottom ground that I don't have the ability to put cell cameras in. So codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Huntworth, man, if you're looking for base layers, if you're looking for basically just a complete getup, right? Base layers to the heavyweight cold season stuff with their heat boost technology. I think the first stop you need to go check out is huntworthgear.com. And then last but not least, man, Reveal trail cameras. We're talking about ease of use, like excellent ease of use. We're talking about great battery life. These new 3.0s, man, they are on fire. I mean, they're an excellent, excellent, excellent trail camera that does what I want done, right? And you guys have heard me talk about this before. I want a trail camera that takes pictures, period, right? And with a cell camera, here's what I want. I want a camera that takes pictures and then sends them to me. Does it get any more basic than that? And I think the new 3.0 from Reveal has that covered. Now, obviously, there's a lot more bells and whistles that go into all of that, right? Along with the app and stuff. So here's what I'm going to say. Make sure that you guys check out the next released hunting gear podcast, because here on Reveal Week, we're going to be talking with individuals who use them, but I will be talking to Tacticam themselves to talk about all the bells and whistles and the details of the 3.0 and the new camera. So stay tuned for that. All right. That has been the intro, my friends. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles, to listen to me talk about the partners that actually pay me to keep this show running and to keep everything that we're doing running. So go take a look at those companies, especially now this Reveal Week, the Reveal Trail Camera by Tacticam. Outside of that, here's Chris B. Great conversation. Let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today is episode number one of Reveal Week, and the first guest on Reveal Week is Mr. Chris B. Chris, man, how are we doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So I'll be completely honest. I don't consume a lot of content, like outdoor content. Maybe it's because I live it every day. I'm in it, so I always try to step away from it. And so I don't watch a lot of outdoor. I don't watch a lot of YouTube. I don't read magazines anymore. I'm in the world of podcasting. Okay. And so honestly, yeah. I don't know too terribly much about you. And so I think the best thing to do today is have a little bit of a hunter profile podcast. Sure. Where I just kind of ask you a lot of questions about who you are, what you love to do, and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I think the first question is like, do you come from a outdoor hunting family?
Yeah. So I grew up in Michigan. My dad was a big outdoors guy, hunting. He was, I guess, the first his generation of hunting, kind of figured it out himself, like self-taught when he was younger, like yep. in his 20s. And he hunted his whole life, mainly a bow hunter. Yep. And being in Michigan, you know, there's tons of outdoorsmen, tons of deer, but you got tons of people. So hunting was definitely tough. But he definitely wanted to pass the baton on to me. So at a very, very young age, I started going hunting with my dad. He started like introducing me, you know, BB guns and bows and that yeah. whole deal. So when I was like 4 or 5, I got like my first tiny little bow and I'd run all around with it or whatever. And when I was 6, I started a youth program. I would do like every Saturday mornings, we'd go to this, it was called Livingston Conservation Sports Association. And every morning there'd be all sorts of kids. It's like a junior Olympic archery development program. So we'd go there and shoot. And I was like borrowing a little bit, you know, bet nicer recurve at that time when I was six or seven. Just kept shooting that. And then I got my first compound bow when I was 8. Mm-hmm. It was a tiny little PSE Spider. From there, I just kept shooting. And when I was 10 years old, which was the legal time you could shoot or you could deer hunt in Michigan with the bow when I was 10. I yeah. shot my first buck at like 10 yards right on the from a ground blind. And then every year since I've been 10, I've shot a deer with my bow. So I'm 27 now. So every single year since I was 10, I've killed I killed a deer with my bow.
Wow.
Getting into after that. So my, you know, big outdoorsman, hunting is what got me into archery. But from there, I kind of went the tournament, you know, direction also, started shooting all
sorts. At what age was that?
That I did tournaments?
Yeah, you started like practicing, yeah. thinking, hey, I want to be a tournament archer.
So I wasn't really thinking it. It was kind of a coincidence. At that same sportsman's club, there was a tiny little regional tournament that they were hosting that we just signed up for because I had a hunting bow at that point and I was like 12. Mm-hmm. And we signed up for that and I shot and I came in second place and there was 2 people in my division. So I was like, oh, that's cool.
Hey, that's the part of the story that you're not supposed to tell the people, yeah, well, right? Hey dude, first I like archery, I got second place, man.
Yeah. I like to say it all. But yeah, so then that was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So then waited all the way until the next year. There was like the local state tournament, you know, a little bit yeah. bigger, maybe a few hundred people at, shot that. And it kind of was just a snowball effect. From there, I think I upgraded my bow when I was 14. We'd shoot all the state indoor tournaments and some outdoor tournaments. And then when I was, Let's see. Later, when I was 14, I got my first like real target bow, like a hand-me-down target bow. And I went to, it was kind of like a family ordeal. It was like travel baseball sort of deal. You could think of it like, well, we went out to our first big tournament in Pennsylvania, and it was nationals, and I shot super well. Yep. And then we actually ended up taking like a family vacation out to California, and it was actually the world team trials for a world trip. Mm-hmm. And I shot up a division, so I was 14, and the next division started at 15, and it was 15 through 17 years old. So I shot up into that class, and I actually, and there was a lot of people at these events. I was the alternate, so I came in fourth place.
Oh, awesome.
So when I was underage for it.
Yeah.
So that was my first reel. I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. And that trip was like to Poland or something, and it would have been, you know, the USA Archer team, you would have made it and stuff. So from there, it kind of lit a fire in me. And we traveled all around after that. I made several world teams after that in like, you know, high school years, college years, went to Taipei, China, South Africa, traveled all around, did a lot of stuff in the States, made a bunch of United States teams. Kind of did the whole deal, man, deal for sure. Shot for, went to Michigan State, shot at the collegiate team there. We did really good there. And kind of while all this was going on, I was shooting National Archery in the Schools program as well, mm-hmm. NASP, which is really popular, especially now. And I did really well there. Couple national world, and that's actually when I went to South Africa, was through that. So awesome. Yeah, I kind of did that whole deal. I don't really do it as much anymore. Just kind of everything else took off. And it requires so much time. You don't realize how much time you have when you're younger and you can just shoot arrows all day long. But I still stay relevant with it and like to go to a couple of them because I do enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely my roots into like really learning archery, learning technical archery, how to work on stuff and, you know, become a better bow hunter because of it.
Yeah. So kind of going back to when you were first picking up a bow and maybe even around the time when you're like, okay, well, I want to go do a tournament, right?
Yeah.
Who taught you how to shoot a bow? Who was teaching you this technical archery information?
Yeah. So I've had several coaches kind of throughout the years that kind of come in and come out as you just kind of get different levels. I mean, at Livingston, that sportsman's club, there was a couple that were like, hey, like, you know, put your feet right, you know, like very simple stuff. Mm-hmm. From there, where I kind of took everything to the next level, was a gentleman named Jim Morrow, who's now passed, but he had a pro shop called NJC Archery in Michigan. And he coached me pretty hard for like 2 years. I mean, we would do like every other week lessons sort of deal, mm-hmm. like the full on deal. He got me like into a back tension release, like upgraded my equipment, recommended that sort of stuff. And then after that, kind of like my next graduation level was George Riles. He's down Archery Learning Center in Georgia. He has like a giant, you know, kids archery team, travel archery team. Probably arguably the best coach ever about archery. He's phenomenal, phenomenal teacher. So he kind of brought me to that next level and the kind of the level that I'm at now, you know, just overall shooting and teaching and all that stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So did you play any other sports in high school or college?
High school, like in the younger years, you know, I did baseball and all that jazz, but hunting and archery really took up my life from, you know, high school and on.
Awesome. Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, okay. It was a full-time deal because I was doing National Archery in Schools program stuff. And then I was doing, you know, like USA Archery stuff. And then when fall came around, everything switched over.
Gotcha. All right. So there's this group, like, so you said like 12 years old, was it, when you competed in your first tournament?
Yeah. So there's all sorts of different categories of styles of archery and ages of archery. So they kind of segregate them up by, you know, every couple age group until you're 20. And then after 20, it's you know, men's professional until 50. And then over 50, they're seniors.
Gotcha.
So kind of like 20 to 50 is your main, you know, men's open or men's pro or whatever else.
Right. So the reason I'm asking this is, I mean, I like to bow hunt, but I would not consider myself an archer. Okay. Yeah. And so there's a skill set there that in order to compete, one must have versus me, a bow hunter who just goes out and tries to kill deer. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was the big jump from where you were to, I don't know, to where you started shooting professional? And what's that jump look like?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I kind of know what you're getting to. It's like archery is so, archery is like more of a performance rather than a sport. It's not like we're going out there and tackling people. You know, you're competing against yourself and you're trying to perform, which is like repeating the same thing over and over again under pressure. So it's a very mental game. I mean, guys argue it's like 90% mental, like Joel Turner right now is a big buzz. But that stuff has been going on since the beginning of time. Yeah. You know, the mental game stuff has always been the most important thing in archery. Like target panic is the most common, like, you know, saying, but essentially it's like anxiety of performance, you know, it's performance anxiety. So yeah, kind of as I went through that, it's amazing. You know, I'm very fortunate that I was able to do it at a young age, but trying to really compete at a high level of something so mentally intensifying it, like archery, I think it really crafted me to think about things in life differently, because I really had to learn how to mentally be strong and mentally, you know, deal with obstacles and things throughout archery. But transferring over from like youth to professional, I mean, expectations, everything kind of went crazy. When I was 16, there's this big tournament called the Vegas Shoot. It's probably the most recognizable tournament if you're just kind of like outside looking in. It's where all the big names, like all the marketing, all, you know, everything comes from. And I was 16 and I was shooting up the division. You know, that technically opens up like 18 or 20. You have to forcefully be in that division, but you can volunteer if you like the punishment. So I shot up and I did really well. So there's 3 days of competition. You shoot 30 arrows each day and it's sudden elimination pretty much. It's like you drop, you miss one of those little 10 rings, you're gone. So you start out, I mean, there's tons of people. And you start out and it's like day one, you know, more than half of the field's cleared because they, you know, you drop a 10. So I shot clean day one. Day two, I also shot clean. So going into day three, there was only like 20 some people. And at that point, I mean, I'm just a kid with a bow, like we're just shooting. And Hoyt, who is not with him anymore, working for him anymore, but Mike Looper, he's the VP of Hoyt. And he walked down with like a pro staff jersey. He was like, hey, like, good luck this last day. And I'm like some 16-year-old kid. Now I'm nervous, you know. Yeah. It's like he's making me wear a pro staff jersey and everything going in the last day clean. So I ended up making it 7 ends and I dropped it was my 7th end, my 3rd arrow. I dropped and shot a 9. So I shot a 899 out of 900. So I still did phenomenally well. So anyways, that's kind of what kicked off my professional career. Is 16 and on, it was kind of like, okay, wow, I can actually maybe do something here, you know, won a little bit of money sort of deal. And you're like, wow, okay. So mentally, that was definitely challenging. And then you have an expectation level beyond that of like, wow, I did good my first time around. Now I really gotta stay with it. But
yeah. What does a training program for a professional archer look like?
It depends, man. There's guys like Levi Morgan, who like never practices.
Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies, and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Like he'll pick up his bow and shoot every now and again. And then there's guys that have to practice all the time to stay up with it. Yeah. Me personally, it's just more of an endurance thing. Like unless I'm working on something, I don't do this anymore. I mean, I shoot once a week now, like just to stay, relevant, but, and you know, arms not fall off when I do pick up my bow.
Right.
But you know, back then it was like, are we working on something? Are we changing something in our form? Okay. We need attention to that. So I'm going to shoot more to try to fix that.
Yeah.
But if you're just kind of maintaining, I mean, 50 arrows a day, 50 arrows every other day, is very, very doable. I know guys that went really, really deep down the wormhole and were like all about like performance curves and you perform and shoot better on your downward quantity of arrows per day. So they would track their calendar out with their tournaments and kind of have like a ebb and flow up and down. And so that when they land on the tournament weekends, they're kind of on their like 70 arrows a day, because that's kind of where your tournaments were. So they would do like 200 arrow days, you know, a few days before that. And then on their downward, they would, yeah. So guys go really deep, or guys don't even practice and they're just gifted. So yeah. it depends much. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. I'm definitely the guy that has to be in it in order to shoot well. So
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink. Then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Based off of your experience, what are the characteristics of a good archer?
Yeah, someone who's incredibly open-minded and is self-aware of themselves. I think a lot of good archers can kind of teach themselves and train themselves and be very reactionary to what's going on. You know, I think a lot of guys get very stuck in their ways, and aren't open to trying new things or, you know, are not self-aware, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, I think the guys that don't change a lot are also really good. It's like, you can have the absolute worst form in the entire world, but do the same thing every single time and be better than someone who has really good looking form, but maybe does everything a little bit different and is very inconsistent. Yeah. So there's, yeah. And that's famous in the target archer world, because you'll have guys standing up on the line that are like, how do you even hit the middle? You know, just looking at them. And you know, they win the tournament sort of deal. Yeah. So repetibility is the biggest thing. When it comes to, you know, precision and accuracy.
So I look at, I've talked to some professional archers before on this podcast, and they're one said that he kind of compares it to baseball slumps, where I know in archery, you have to be perfect on, you know, like the 10 ring, right? The goal is the 10 ring every time. But do you guys ever go through slumps where it's just like, oh my God, what am I doing wrong? And things kind of fall apart a little bit, and then you build back into perfection?
For sure. That's kind of where I was going with those curves. You know, like, cause it can go off of a training regimen, you know, like your high quantity days. Let's say you're just like, the goal for that day is like, I'm going to shoot 200 arrows a day. I really don't care where they land. I just want to get my endurance up. Yep. Your scores are probably not going to be super great then, but on a 50 arrow day or something like that, they can be really, really good. Like good high quality, you know, all tens type of shot. Yeah. But as far as, yeah, man, I mean, sometimes some of my best scores always come right after like a, like let's say Vegas, the Vegas tournament, you know, you shoot a bunch of arrows, you come home, you wait like 3 days to pick your bow back up. And then you pick your bow back up after those 3 days and you shoot like your high score. Yeah. So it's definitely sometimes, or like after hunting season, you pick up your bow, your tournament rig in December, and it feels really good because you haven't touched it in a while and you shoot some high scores, and then you shoot for a week and they just go down because then you start picking every little thing apart. So yeah, it definitely is kind of ebbs and flows as far as how well you're shooting, for sure.
Gotcha. What happens when you hit one of those slumps? Or I don't know, maybe there's an example you could share with us. It's like, okay, there's $10,000 on the line and I have one arrow. If I nail it, I get the money. If I don't, like high pressure type scenarios.
Yeah, well, I guess answer your first kind of question there is what happens when you're in a slump. I was told once that don't keep shooting if you keep shooting if you're shooting really good. Don't keep shooting if you're shooting really bad. Like everything's falling apart, like you just need to take a break sort of deal. So it's okay to take breaks, I think, in those slump periods and kind of regroup or maybe switch over to shooting inside at some blank bale stuff or just kind of mixing it up, you know, definitely really helps. As far as like a pressure cooker shot, I mean, toss of a coin really, man. I mean, some people perform really well under pressure. Some people don't. It's extremely a mental game. It's a mix of mental and physical, of course, because you got to hold steady. You got to perform the good shot. And you can't trick yourself out, by getting in your mind, like, you know, something as simple about like saying, I hope I don't hit the nine. And then all you're thinking about is hitting a nine. And then your ping gravitates over to the nine because you're thinking about it and you pluck one off. I mean, you really can't. That's tough for me to answer in a quick question just of what do you do in those situations, because there's all sorts of things, but it's tough, man.
Gotcha. Okay, so is there let's say I call you up, I go, hey man, I'm a bow hunter, I'm not ever going to get into any competitions. What kind of shooting schedule would you recommend for the average bow hunter to maybe stay consistent all year round?
That's a great thing right there, stay consistent year round. George Riles always used to say to me, because I'm busy now or whatever, he's like, man, it's like, only if you could shoot 12 arrows a day. He's like, just pull the bow back and shoot 12 arrows a day, every day. He's like, you would be so much better off. You'd be able to pick your bow up and know that thing inside and out, instead of taking a week off and shooting 50 one day. It's like, if you just shoot 12 arrows a day. So, you know, if I know guys can't go to a range all the time or do, you know, have the ability to shoot in their backyards or whatever else, but even just a target in your garage, you know, just pick the bow up and shoot it 10 times, 12 times, 20 times. Yeah. It really does help. Just staying familiar with it. And that kind of dives into a whole nother deal of like the most important piece of equipment when it comes to bow hunting is yourself. Yeah. It's not all this other equipment. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So how long has it been since you like were in it competitively, professionally? Sure.
I would say like my early 20s, so like 21, 22, I was traveling all around. I mean, maybe even arguably 23, traveling all around doing dozen plus tournaments a year. And now, like this year, I'll probably only do three, maybe four, just kind of the big ones go to if nothing's overlapping. It's so expensive to travel all around and it takes so much time. And it's like, it's a full-time gig. Like if you're not the first couple guys winning all the time, you're not making money. So it's like a lot of these guys are doing it for fun, or trying to do it, or have a side gig and also do it. So it's very time consuming and very expensive.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So now, when did you you stepped out early 20s, like into 2023? And then is that where you kind of started like your company and
So I started my YouTube channel when I was 16.
Okay.
So it kind of coincided with everything. I chose to take everything on all at once pretty much when I was 16. Or maybe even a little younger. But yeah, I started there and I filmed, started filming some hunts, started filming just some funny archery videos, just uploading just for fun. I really enjoyed videos. I really enjoyed filming and editing and just kind of like self-taught myself. Just kind of that whole deal. And I filmed a funny statistic until just, I think it was 2 years ago, from 16 to let's say 25 years old, every single deer that I killed with the bow was on film. It's like 60 or 70 deer.
Yeah.
So either self-film buddies and then eventually camera guys. It's like, besides maybe like a random doe, everything was on film. So I pretty much dedicated myself to like solo film everything, or, you know, get someone in the tree or whatever else. So 16, 17, 18, 19, like all the way up through college, it was 100% for fun. We were just doing whatever. And, you know, I got maybe a little bit of traction in there. By the time I was in college, I probably had, you know, 10,000 subscribers or something like that. But my sophomore year of college, I waited until the last day of that semester I could drop all of my classes and get a refund. It's like, I think it was October 1, which is fitting since it's most opening days. And I said, screw it. I'm like, I'm going to drop all my classes. I'm just going to travel around all fall and just film everything. So I did that. I didn't even tell my parents. I kind of created like our first, you know, I was like, let's film, like, I forget, it was like a 10 or 12 quote unquote episodes. Not that it's TV, but just episodes to kind of proof it out to see if this could be a thing. And we did. And I mean, we shot a bunch of stuff. And it worked out. I like hired my first camera guy, it's like $1,500 or $2,000 for like 30 days. We went on the road and just went crazy. So that kind of proofed it out. And really that was the starting point of like the business decision of like, we could probably make something happen here.
Yeah. I wish I could get 20 days for $2,000 for a camera guy.
That was a little bit ago too. He's very, very new, or he was talented, but definitely very new. And yeah, so that, no, I've been at the YouTube game for 10 plus years now.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And so how does everything that you've learned, like in the archery space, carry over to the bow hunting space?
Yeah. Well, as far as like technical wise, I mean, I'm very, very technical, very, you know, tuned in with tuning and broadheads and arrows and everything, and try to say that, of course, like through YouTube and everything. But as far as bow hunting, you know, it just makes me a better archer. You know, the most important thing in bow hunting is the archery side of it, is the actual bow part of it. So, you know, being really deadly there, I think is the most thing. And then just like, I think some of the mental stuff, like just being able to perform under pressure, I think is a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't do it too much now because it's a pain in the butt, but solo filming, like all growing up, and I mean a whole nother level of mental toughness, man. I mean, like trying to, you know, every morning in the stand setting up your cameras, and then, you know, getting the shot on film in the moment, you know, it's just like you got to be so dialed in, moving everything. It's a lot going on. So doing that really, you know, was great mental toughness, and combined with archery and competitions and everything. So it's a great melting pot for all of that.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, man. Funny story. My first deer I ever shot with a bow was on film. And then I also lost one of the biggest bucks I've ever had in shooting range. Like top $5.
Mm.
He came in, I was self-filming. He walked through a shooting lane as I'm trying to get the camera set up. And that was the last time I ever took a camera in the tree with me. I didn't want to dedicate to it.
Yeah. The amount of deer that have lived.
Oh yeah.
Due to the cameras is pretty phenomenal. That's just part of the deal. I always, whenever I get frustrated or anything, I stop and I think, I was like, if I didn't do any of this, I wouldn't be able to go hunting literally 100 days out of the year.
Right.
You know, it's just like, it's part of the deal.
I don't ask this question to very many people, but I like where, like, your timeline sets up perfect for it. Okay. You pretty much dropped out of college. Okay.
Well, so I continue going to college.
Oh, you did. Okay. Just that one semester.
I took that semester off.
Oh, okay.
But I went for 3 more years, and it switched majors like three times and was growing everything else in the back end. And I had a professor on my fifth year, some video project thing. And I like never showed up to class. And like I submitted it and it was like, you know, the best one, because this is what I do. We've been doing videos or whatever. And she's like, why are you even in college? And I'm like, that's a great question. So I dropped out. Yeah, I had 12 credits left until I graduated. And I was just done. Yeah.
Yeah. With that said, what was the support from your family at that point? Were they all in it?
They didn't know what any of this was. I mean, to be honest, that first year of sophomore, I was like carrying balances on my credit cards. Like I got a business credit card at that point. And I was like carrying a balance on it to travel all around and everything. And that year I finally got some support from like one or two companies, which definitely helped. But I was working at like the MSU Demmer Center, which is the archery center. And I would coach, kids like, you know, on the weekends and after classes and stuff like that. Yeah, man, but it was definitely not fruitful for a long time.
Yeah.
But actually at that time too, throughout college, I was kind of started an internship, through Hoyt Archery. So kind of back up a little bit too. It's like when I was 16 and made that relationship with Hoyt, I kind of grew that relationship. So when I got into college and started learning all this social media stuff or whatever, I interned and helped run their social media, which then graduated to me running all of their social media channels. Mm-hmm. So I did that for like a year or two.
Gotcha.
During college.
Okay. So when you told your parents, hey, or you had a conversation with your family and you're like, listen, I'm going to be a YouTube creator. I'm going to hunt for my living now. And I know you have some other, like you have another company that makes some archery products. Mm-hmm. But because what was that like? What was that conversation like? I'm not going to be in the traditional 9-to-5 game.
They definitely weren't stoked about it, and they didn't really know the pathway, I guess, of this made up pathway. Cause I even think back then it really wasn't even a pathway quite yet. They didn't really know. I mean, it's like, it's totally different, like generational, you know. It's, they wanted me to go to college and, you know, I didn't. I mean, it was very, it's just like, what is this? Like, what are you doing? Totally different. Different.
Did they ever ask you questions like, when are you going to get a real job?
No, not really like that. I think they always knew something would work out, but they just didn't fully know the scope of it. You know, like they knew like potential for like working with companies and stuff like that. But as far as everything else, I mean, it's just not, it just, you know, didn't fully know.
All right. So when did the products come into play?
Yeah. So, you know, all this is going on. We're, you know, in college and stuff and traveling around with George Riles, the Colby Hanley, who is the founder of UltraView, him and I linked up and started, you know, being really good friends. And, we were probably 19, if I had to guess, travel around shooting all together. And he's making all these little tiny 3D printed archery trinkets. And he started, you know, ticking them live online and selling them. He's like, hey, I need some photos. I need some videos. Like, I need some stuff. And I'm like, yeah, like I can definitely help out with that. And that's kind of initially how I got in the loop with Colby and UltraView. And then from there, we just kind of grew together. And I mean, besides like his very first, you know, days of literally days, I pretty much have been UltraView since the start. Went on to do like this big Inventure Prize thing through Georgia Tech that UltraView won. It was like a big grant and a patent, free patent for this. Colby made this like, it was called the original UltraView. It was actually called Starlight at the time, but it lit up the fiber in the center of the scope. So he actually won that. And we really grew, Colby and I, Colby's my best friend. I was like best man in his wedding. We kind of grew very parallel with each other. Like I grew all my media stuff and he grew UltraView, and we very much helped each other in synergy together. Like UltraView leveraged my channels and, you know, we grew together. So, I mean, now, I mean, I was just down there last week. I go down once a month just for meetings or whatever else, and very involved now to this day, at a higher level. But yeah, man, at the very beginning, it was like, you know, Kobe 3D printed a product and it somehow needed to get marketed. So that was a yin and yang for sure for a long time. But it's very, very more complex now. And yeah, kind of since then, you know, I started, I guess, B-Real merch. And then technically as of today, July 1, it's BRealCustom.com. So I made that back in 2017. We ticked live B-Real merch and it was just like hats and t-shirts and random stuff. But now, especially the last 3 years, we've been ramping it up to work with companies to do, put our little spin on products and then, you know, obviously sell them. So we do custom arrows, we do, you know, custom UltraView stuff, hats, t-shirts. We got a couple more things in the pipeline for this year, but that's really taken off. So keeping a pulse on everything has become very difficult. There's been a lot going on these days.
Gotcha. Yeah. And this is the side of the hunting industry that nobody really ever talks about, right? It's the, hey, I want to go hunt for a living. Well, there's no such thing really.
Yeah.
I mean, never. When you think about it, because you're not just a hunter, you're a business owner. Like for me, I'm a solo guy. I mean, I do everything on my own. And so it's one of those things where it's just like, geez, man, there's like hunting is kind of like my vacation from the job that I have.
Right.
Really. So with that, yeah. With
that, a lot of layers, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So with that said, what does this upcoming season look like for you?
Yeah. So we got a lot. I go to Australia here soon for a water buffalo hunt.
Okay.
And then I got a lot of some mule deer stuff, some elk stuff, a lot of whitetail stuff. Not going hammer down on whitetail, but I drew Kansas. I always do Oklahoma stuff, always do Iowa stuff. Obviously I live here now. So yeah, just trying to consume whitetails this year, man. I mean, kind of last year I went heavy on traveling all around early. I did like 3 elk hunts and went on like a mountain goat hunt. So it was very, my early fall was very travel heavy and stuff. So I'm going to try to do that a little bit less and be home or at least doing something whitetail related.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. When did you move to Iowa?
It's been 4 years now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So yep. I grew up in Michigan and then Iowa for 4 years.
Gotcha. All right. So I drew Kansas this year too. I'm pretty excited. On. This is my first year ever hunting Kansas. So I'm really looking forward to that. Now, do you ever go ahead and like to a different state, like Kansas or Oklahoma or whatever, do you go and you scout or set up trail cameras or prep places before you go on your hunts?
Whether you bond over streaming binge-worthy videos, watching sports recaps, video gaming, or by unplugging altogether, the 2026 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid helps keep you connected throughout your journey. Learn more at Lincoln.com. Available connectivity features and functionality vary by model. Package pricing, trials, and term lengths vary by model. Video streaming and games are only available while parked.
Yeah, for sure. Are you like talking specifically like public or private or what?
Whatever. Just kind of explain what's going on. Approach is. Yeah.
So, I mean, I did the public thing for a little bit, especially out of state, obviously easy and everything. It's tough now. It's tough for me personally. And as far as like, you know, trucks parked in the parking lot and, you know, then it gets out and everything else and the uncertainties of public. And I'll definitely do it every year, especially when it comes to like elk or mule deer. I feel like that's way more fun. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to whitetails, I really try to have something a little bit more dialed in, just so I'm not stressed out. I'm stressed out enough that I don't need to be creeping and crawling all over people. I hunted in Kansas on public, which was obviously, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done a little bit of everything, but Oklahoma, I got a pretty cool program now. A couple buddies and I leased a place down there. And it's, when we go down there, it's always fun. you know, obviously we do kind of like a hang and hunt style because we got a lot of guys and the place is pretty big. So we can kind of bounce around and do whatever. You know, places here in Iowa, you know, I really enjoy the property management side of things and getting things dialed in. And I feel like that's very, very rewarding. Monitor bucks, you know, year after year after year. I mean, that's probably out of anything hunting related. I love the management side and watching deer year after year and thinking. I love strategy. You know, there's strategy in the public land side of things, but then there's strategy, long-term strategy about the stuff you can control. So yeah, you know, as far as mule deer or elk or whatever else, I don't have time to bounce out to like a Colorado for a week. I just don't anymore. It's just too busy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely one thing that, man, I've gotten real busy throughout the years, and I have a couple farms that I don't own or anything. And I don't do any type of habitat work, but I do run a lot of trail cameras, and I do do a lot of, I don't know, like not necessarily naming them anymore, but I know like, okay, yeah, here's a returning customer. Here's the same buck from previous years, or what's he going to turn into, or, you know, trying to follow the deer herd as closely as possible. What is your approach to documenting your farms that you have control of through trail cameras?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is the time to do it right now. So actually, like yesterday, I put in a giant water hole, and we have the new Tacticam 3.0 cameras, and I put one of them out. But it's like right now, it's just trying to see who lived, who's sticking around. You know, it's finally July 1. It's everything's finally forming out enough to where you can kind of see, you know, who's and what's what. So we got like one buck last night. I was actually just driving around the farm and saw it out in a field, and it's been on no trail cameras, no nothing. But you know, it's out in the middle of a field, of course. So yeah, I mean, I run a lot of cameras, and we try to really try to dial it in. But as far as year after year, some things I love to do is at the end of every year, I pull all of the cards out of my cameras and I inventory it on my laptop, even though it's like most of them are cell cameras. I'll inventory every year, kind of like what farm, and just do a big dump so that when I have to go back in the archives, I can hard drive it, look at my laptop, which takes a long time to dump. But it's good to have that set up, you know, and the app is fantastic for looking quick. But as far as like a deep dive 2, 3, 4 years ago, this one deer we've had a farm since we moved out here. This is the fourth year of history with it. And we just got a photo of it. So it's like to go back and find those photos, it's really, really good to have a good organization on your laptop or a hard drive or something. As far as like getting inventory right now, like in Iowa, you can put corn out in the summertime when you're not hunting over it. So that's very, very effective right now. Like we run some feeders just to get inventory on deer. And I mean, we'll pull them and get them out of there in, you know, September. But for right now, just getting inventory is fantastic. And then throughout the season, I've kind of been on the, I don't know if you're familiar with Jeff Sturgis, but I kind of on the vine scrape, Jeff Sturgis program, big long vine scrape in the middle of trails in front of the tree stand. So it's like tree stand plus vine scrape, if it makes sense, plus water hole. It's kind of my program. So it's like every tree stand location gets a Tacticam and a vine for sure. And then if it makes sense, I'll put in a water hole. So if we can kind of do that three combo, that's kind of my program. Depending on food, you know, food's very dependent. Obviously if it's on a ridge or anything else, but for sure, vine scrape on the biggest trail right around the stand that you can shoot with a Tacticam.
Yeah. That's funny because Sturgis is going to be on Reveal Week.
Good.
He's going to be the next episode after you. Good. And so I'm really looking forward to him. And dude, I'll tell you what, I got hyped up about mock scrapes from Troy Pottinger. And so I started using mock scrapes and pre-orbital scent over the last 2 years. And I cannot believe the amount of deer that I get on trail camera on a mock scrape with, and I use Code Blue Rope-A-Dope system, that's what they have. And oh my God, man, it's like, I think that would be perfect because I get a lot of my in my summer inventory from mineral sites, because in Iowa, you know, we can do mineral sites too. So I'm doing mineral sites, and then my goal on all my farms this upcoming year, except for my running gun sets, is on my, my main rut funnels. The goal is to have a mock scrape within shooting range. And then, you know, you add that in with the right wind direction and the right terrain feature. And the goal is to get deer to continuously come into, you know, hopefully 25 yards broadside or whatever, and just get as many opportunities as possible.
Yeah. It's a deadly program. And, you know, as far as inventory, especially during season, I'm just knowing what's around, forcing myself to, you know, every big good stand location, you know, obviously having the stand, but then some sort of mock scrape. I really love the vines, and a camera. I mean, they're using it right now. I mean, I have photos of fawns, you know, playing with the vine, rubbing their scent on it. Then, you know, next photo is a doe, and the next photo is a buck, you know, all just kind of getting at it with the vine. So they're fantastic.
Heck yeah. Cool, man. Well, what's the hype level right now as far as, you know, it's July, it's July. We're recording this on July 1st. What's your hype level right now leading into the upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. There's still a lot of work. You know, I'm just thinking about the big list of things and projects that we got going on here that I want to do. But yeah, it's definitely getting there. As soon as you can start kind of seeing what bucks are who, you kind of get excited. I like to not get too excited because there's still a lot of work to be done. But yeah, it's been a super wet season here in Iowa this year, and which is good, good and bad. You never really think that you're dealing with too wet of ground for planning and getting around and everything else, but we are. It's raining right now, which is crazy. But I'm excited. I'm always excited when August comes around. You know, I get really excited. I typically have I'm going to Australia, but that's kind of a weird one-off hunt. But I'm typically going somewhere in August, and this year I'm really not. So the hype level is going to be extreme. I'm going to have FOMO this August when everyone else blasting out doing something crazy. But it'll be all good.
Good deal, man. Well, Chris, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us for a little bit. If people want to find out more information about you or check out your YouTube channel, where do we send them?
Yeah, so it's just my name, Chris B, YouTube channel, and Instagram.
Perfect, perfect. Hey, good luck this upcoming season, man.
Thanks, dude.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.